I'm John Lobertini, KGO 810.
I love politics.
Not sure whether politics and dating really go together.
The only thing I do recognize right now is a political fiasco here.
Political decision.
What are you doing? You don't know anything about politics.
Well, apparently you're more political than we thought.
I'm no cheap, crooked politician.
Gentlemen, affairs of state must take precedent over the affairs of state.
Boy, I did not go into politics to pimper you.
This is the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
And away we go on the Drex Radio Show, live and local in the Bay and around the world at KGORadio.com. So let me get this right. Somebody in Chino Hills in SoCal won the $1.5 billion. Well, affluenza anyway if they're in Chino Hills. Oh, my goodness. How'd that happen? Do they really need the $1.5 billion? All right, well, but here's the good news. 3 Bay Area winners, 12 in California, I do believe. We'll check in with John Lobertini coming up here in a little bit. But 3 Bay Area winners in Santa Rosa, Santa Cruz, and Vacaville, $1 million. That's not bad. That's not bad. Powerball number 10. Boy, that would be the first number I'd look at. All right, I want to say good evening to my next guest, All Things Doctor, tonight. I'm Garth, and I'm a proteinaholic. Dr. Garth, thank you very much for joining us. Dr. Garth Davis.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, I suppose you didn't win the Powerball.
I didn't even play. I didn't even play, no.
Well, you're one of those rare Americans who you're not even in a pool?
No, not even in a pool. I don't quite believe in it, but looks like people had a lot of fun doing it, and it made for a lot of news, so worth that.
For sure. Okay, so let's get to it. I'm Garth, and I'm a proteinaholic, and I think this is very interesting. So as I understand this, when you wrote your book, I mean, you, as a doctor, you were a surgeon doing gastric bypass and things like the band, so you were kind of making your living off of helping obese people not be obese. Am I correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was in a very fixed Western mindset of, something's broke, I'm going to fix it with a knife or I'm going to fix it with medicine. That's, what I was taught in medical school and what I did in practice. And people would come in overweight and I would make their stomach smaller and that was supposed to fix everything.
And what did you find? That it did not?
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of, this is the story is a little bit of a physician heal thyself as well as, looking at my patients. But, I was about 35 years old and treating all these patients. And yet I wasn't very healthy. And I went and got an eye exam done for glasses. And, the optometrist was like, you've got lots of cholesterol in your eyes. And I went and got a life insurance policy test and actually failed getting the upper level life insurance policy because I was hypertensive. And had high cholesterol, liver function tests were elevated. And so all of a sudden I was like, here I am supposed to be telling people how to get healthy. And obviously I don't know what's going on because we're just not, we have about 1 hour of nutrition in medical school. And so I really started studying science of nutrition and what I found was shocking. It made me want to get up on the rooftops and scream it. And that's what the book is all about.
Wow, it's incredible because, here we are at the beginning of the year, and this happens every year. We come out and, there's the dry urinary. We're not drinking for a month, or we're going to do the protein diet, or we're going to do Atkins, or the cabbage soup diet, the cleanse. I mean,
as our gym memberships, and everybody's fooling themselves usually.
Yes, and so as a physician who would perform this surgery, I find this very, very interesting. 808-0810, if you've had this surgery, if you thought about it, your thoughts, did you find that people, when you would do gastric bypass or the band or that they would gain the weight back eventually if they did not resolve their bad habits?
Yeah, that was exactly what I would see, is that people would come back and they would do what they've always done. And by doing what they were always done, oftentimes we were telling them to do that. Like I wrote a book before this book called The Expert's Guide to Weight Loss Surgery, and I told people in that book, eat protein first and eat protein whenever you can. I was shocked to find out when I actually started studying it that the more protein someone eats, the higher chance they have of obesity, heart disease, and diabetes. And so I was giving, and we are giving in general, the American public, this idea that protein is king, when in fact protein may be the absolute source of many of the problems.
Wow, that's really shocking to me because, I mean, yes, I I had my own issues this past year. I had a perforated duodenal, and so, of course, that was a disaster medically.
That's not good.
I'm lucky to be here in 2016, so I did hit the Powerball. Yeah. Yes. So animal protein, but again, my doctor was saying at the beginning, obviously, I have to eat small portions, but protein, protein, protein. So be careful with that.
And it's funny because these doctors, like your doctor, has a layperson's knowledge of what to eat. Someone told him that you should eat protein early on in his medical career, and that's what he goes with. But it doesn't stand the test of the actual research and the studies that we do. And, you know, animal protein is loaded with all kinds of toxins. I mean, the World Health Organization has just recognized processed meat and beef as a carcinogen. And yet your doctor is telling you should eat more carcinogen, when we just did your surgery. That just doesn't make any sense.
Right. Now, here in California, and I'm blessed to be here, but I go to the grocery store, for instance, you know, I like to eat breakfast, and so if you buy the GMO-free and as you say, the antibiotic-free and all of these free, cage-free, all of these sort of things free, the sausage patties, for example, are $4.50, but if you buy the processed one, you get two for $3, two boxes. So, you know, it's tempting. It's like, well, that sausage is sausage. Protein is protein. Apparently not.
No, yeah, it's not. I mean, it's a lot cheaper to just have a bowl of old-fashioned oatmeal with a few berries on it, and then you've got a much better breakfast that's going to, you know, keep your blood sugars down, that's going to keep you from getting diabetes, and it's going to keep you full and losing weight. So yeah, I went from the sausage and eggs for breakfast to the oatmeal, saved some money, and got a lot healthier.
All right. So is animal protein making you sick? What are some of the things that are tells?
Well, we eat way more than the rest of the world. I mean, if you look at the American diet, every meal is focused on an animal protein. And we know that we have more diabetes than the rest of the world. We have a shorter longevity. We have more cancer. And these are very, very nicely tied together when you look at the statistics and look at the actual research studies. So I think, you know, if you're sitting there at home and you've got hypertension and you're seeing your doctor for heart disease and you don't want to die of cancer, and yet you're going and eating a cheeseburger or you're having steak or, you know, even things as benign as we think of like chicken or a Subway sandwich, you're making your own health. You look at these parts of the world where they don't eat this kind of stuff, they don't have the diseases we do. I mean, in Okinawa or the other blue zones where people live long, healthy lives, they eat very little protein, about 7% of their calories. The vast majority of what they eat are the kind of things we're told to avoid, which are carbohydrates like potatoes and rice and things like that.
Right. Oh, boy. So, bingo. Bingo on that. Let's break on that because, I have friends in Thailand. And when I go to Thailand, he's exactly right. It's a whole different ball game, and we'll chat about it. And by the way, if you have any questions or comments, are you a proteinaholic? 808-0810 is the number. 808-0810-808810. To the Drex Radio Show on KGO810. You're listening to the Drex Radio Show on KGO810. Good evening, everybody. And, besides the Powerball, we're talking to lots of doctors tonight, and my guest right now is Dr. Garth Davis, and we're talking about protein and your health. And his book is, it's a great read because if you're a proteinaholic like him, then you would, well, I guess you used to be a proteinaholic.
Used to be.
Recovering. Okay. So, and we were discussing before the break, the rest of the world, they're more into carbs, which I don't know why that's a dirty word here in the States, but it is. What's up with that?
That's very bizarre. And, a lot of it comes from industry and stuff like that that's trying to promote their products. And you need protein, you need this. But, you know, one of the most successful diets that's ever been done in this country and very well studied in the 1930s was a diet done at Duke called the Rice Diet. And with putting people just on rice and fruit, they cured just about every disease process. And somehow we've forgotten about the success of just eating natural whole grains, carbs, and starches, which is what, if you look at our bodies, we're designed to eat. We are made to eat starches. And yet somehow that's become a bad word.
Right. It's very interesting, especially, as I mentioned, I got friends in Thailand. I would go over there, and we are taught to stay away from white rice, and I love it. But yet, you've got billions of people on the other side of the planet eating it every single day, almost every meal.
Yeah.
So where's the problem? What is the problem?
Right.
Yeah. Stay away from starch. I mean, the paleo diet.
I try not to hang out with people who go on diets and stuff like that, but I remember some person in my past, I was like, hey, let's grab some sushi. And they're like, yeah, I really can't because of all that rice. And I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
I just think of sushi as so healthy. Get out of here. So,
look, we're in this crazy time in this world where, you know, people think hamburgers are bad for you, but not because of the you know, disgusting meat that's in between it. It's the buns, right? We blame the buns and not the hamburger. It's become somewhat outrageous, and people misconstrue science so much. And a big part of my book is presenting all the tons of scientific data that prove this point. And that's all, you know, I really try to get that out to the people so that they get the real information.
Doctor, so a myth, a diet high in carbohydrates leads to obesity.
Yeah, absolute myth. In fact, it's very, very difficult for your body to turn a carbohydrate to fat. That's called de novo lipogenesis. And your body only does that if you completely saturated all of your, you know, we store carbohydrates, glycogen in muscles. And your body will only turn carbs to fat if you've completely saturated your glycogen stores and you're eating way over your basal metabolic rate calories. So basically, you're eating like a pig and you're not moving. Yeah, then carbs will be turned to fat. But it's very hard for your body to turn carbs to fat. Now, eating fat, that goes straight to fat. The fat you eat goes straight to the places you don't want it to go. And so a lot of these diets that are out there now, eat more fat, it just makes absolutely no physiologic sense.
Wow. And protein on a label, you know, has what researchers call a health halo effect.
Halo,
do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, it's kind of crazy Western culture, but we are very, very susceptible to marketing. And the new thing is to market protein. And we think because something's marketed with protein, it's going to be better for us. And we got into this problem a long time ago when we thought we went on a low-fat craze. We never actually went low-fat, but what did we do instead of eating the low-fat? We ate the snack wells, you know. And it said low-fat, you know, Oreos all of a sudden were good for you because they were low-fat. And now this is happening with protein. You know, there's Cheerios, higher protein. Or, you know, I've got patients every day. It's like, well, I ate this, you know, special K-bar because it has high protein. You know, I'm like, it also has high fat, high calories, and is filled with a bunch of chemicals. It's not good for you. You're much better off eating an apple. But people just can't accept the fact that an apple is better for you than these, you know, made-up products.
Well, sure. You know, the old adage, an apple a day keeps the doctor away. But I was told that that's not necessarily true.
Well, I don't know. An apple a day will definitely make you a healthier person. It's not necessarily going to keep a doctor away, but I think you're more likely to keep a doctor away eating an apple a day than eating a protein bar a day.
Okay, so what about, because we are in January, as we mentioned at the top of the hour, everybody doing their New Year's resolutions, and I know some people doing protein shakes.
Yeah, the funny thing is, if you look at the science, what our bodies probably need, a male probably needs about 56 grams of protein a day, and a woman needs 46 grams of protein a day. Now, that's not even what they need. You probably need less than that, but that's the optimal level. So if you get 56 grams, you're guaranteed by the RDA to get enough protein to not wither. But we eat, on average, a male will eat 80 to 120 grams of protein a day. So, you know, we're almost doubling what the RDA recommendation is for optimal amount of protein. And yet on top of that, we think we need even more protein with protein shakes. It just doesn't make any sense. We're eating so much protein. Now, one thing we're not getting at all is fiber. So we're in this like protein surplus and this fiber deficiency, and we're getting sicker and sicker, but no one seems to notice that.
Okay. I can hear people screaming at me through their radios. Ask them about processed sugar and all of those things. Yes. What about that?
Look, it's not good for you. I mean, I kind of follow an approach with my patients that, you know, every bite you eat should have some kind of nutrient value to it. So if you're eating pure processed sugar, there's no nutrient value to it. It does increase your blood sugars, which will make you hungrier again sooner. But I think that it's become a scapegoat. I think the meat industry, the dairy industry, has really tried to get away from the idea that saturated fat is bad for you. And what they've done is tried to shine the light on poor sugar over there, saying that sugar is the real problem. You know, obesity and disease is a multifactorial problem. There's not one thing that causes it. It's not just protein. It's not just fat. It's not just sugar. It's a combination of eating unnatural foods. I think Michael Pollan said it best when he said, eat real foods, mostly vegetables, and not too much. It's that simple.
Dr. Garth Davis, you are setting off alarm bells here in the city of San Francisco because we are the sugar police.
Yeah, you are. Well, you've got a guy there named Dr. Robert Lustig, UCSF, and he's on this wild rampage over sugar. A lot of his studies are based on rat studies. A lot of his stuff is based on overfeeding to very, very high degree, and they don't accurately portray what the average person is eating. But again, I'm not saying that sugar is necessarily good. I'm just saying that it's become a scapegoat. Like, oh, I could eat whatever I want so long as I'm not eating sugar. And that's very far from the truth. I mean, I see thousands of patients for weight loss every year, and everybody's on Atkins, and everybody's on paleo, and everyone's still getting bigger and bigger and thicker and thicker. And it looks like, you know, they're cutting up. And actually, over the past 5 to 8 years, we've cut back sugar pretty substantially in this country, and yet we've gotten more obese during that time. So this idea that sugar is the end-all, be-all is just completely false.
Okay, Proteinaholic is the name of the book. I want to take a break here, and we'll check in with John Lopertini in the KGO newsroom because we've got a lot of Powerball news. But when we come back, we will continue to discuss, does this mean if you don't want to be a proteinaholic, by the way, that is the name of his book, Proteinaholic, should you consider, I don't know, becoming a vegetarian? Which way do you go? Do you want to be vegan? Good, bad, 808-0810 is the number to the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810. Okay, so this is very interesting when we're talking about protein, and because this time of year, everybody has the New Year's resolution, I'm going to stop, and especially this one, dryonary seems to be the trending diet right now of stop drinking alcohol for a month. So according to science, people who stopped drinking for about a month lost an average of 3.5 pounds and lowered their cholesterol and lowered the amount of fat in their liver by 15% and drank significantly less 6 months later than they did before. And that study, this new study, also found that not drinking for a month can actually change your drinking patterns too. Okay, we have the doctor back. And doctor, we were talking about fad diets. So let's start where we began with you, and that was seafood, and then we'll get to alcohol.
Sure. Seafood, I was saying before I cut off it, you know, right very close to you guys in Loma Linda, California, they've done some great studies on the Seventh-day Adventists, because some of the Seventh-day Adventists are vegan, some are vegetarian, some are pesco-vegetarian. Definitely the more plant-based you are, the better off you are. But fish eaters were very healthy. The problem with fish, besides the overfishing of the oceans, is the fact that our waters are so contaminated that I got a lot of people now that are going pesco vegetarian, where they're just eating fish and vegetables, and they come in and their mercury levels are going sky high.
Wow. Ooh, yes.
I tell my patients, fish twice a week is fine, but more than that may be dangerous.
Okay, that does sound okay. We'll get to the alcohol, but first let's take some callers because we've got a lot of people lined up who've been waiting. Go ahead, Heather.
Yeah, Ian in San Francisco has a cute, funny story for
Ian,
us.
Ian, good evening. You're on KGO 810.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to talk about, piggyback to the anti-sugar diet and the anti-sugar movement. And I have a funny story because I was always skeptical of that and, you know, what the real motivations were behind it. And I was actually at a party with Dr. Lustig, who I don't know if his name has come up yet in this show, but he's probably the premier researcher in that area, UCSF.
Yeah, we just did talk about him, so go ahead and tell the story.
Yeah, and the whole sugar is toxic movement. And so we're at the party, and there's this big ice cream cake with all this frosting on it. And I go to my wife, and I say, like, I wonder if Dr. Lustig here is gonna actually have some. And within a few minutes, he's totally gorging on the ice cream cake. And so I'm thinking, all right, I got to get a photo of this. And so I take out my phone to get a photo, and I also capture his wife in the background also, you know, just stuffing her face with ice cream cake. So it's, I have 3 kids, and I let them eat sugar. If anybody out there is denying their kids, you know, that part of childhood, I would just say, like, you know, I really think it's a scam, the dogs aren't eating the dog food in terms of their own research. So.
Okay, all right, let's let the doctor answer. Go ahead, Dr. Davis?
No, I mean, you know, this is classic. I see this all the time. I go to, like, weight loss conferences, and the doctors don't look healthy at all, and they're eating junk food. And, you know, if Dr. Lustig thought sugar was so evil, I don't think he'd eat that cake. I mean, I can't put a piece of steak in my mouth anymore now that I know what it does to my body. I don't know how, if he's so sure that sugar is the problem, how he can go eat an ice cream cake. That's a pretty funny story. Thanks for that.
Well, yeah. And you know what? I have to go to this because as we, before we run out of time, I want to talk about, and you tell me if this is fad or it's right on point. What about the gluten-free diet?
No, total. Yeah. I mean, look, there's going to be a few people in the world that have a true, true, true gluten sensitivity. We check their antibodies and they're high, et cetera. But the vast majority of people that think that they've got gluten sensitivity, it's just not true. Probably what's going on is we've eaten such an unhealthy diet, such a high meat diet, it's changed our bowel bacteria. So we just can't process food like we're supposed to. But they did a great study where they took people who said that they were gluten sensitive, and they told them they were giving them a gluten-free diet, but they actually gave them gluten, and they measured their responses. And when they think they're having a gluten-free diet, no response. But when they're given, you know, when they're told that they're eating gluten and they don't give them a gluten diet, they told them they have terrible responses. In other words, it's almost like a placebo effect.
I think right. So. Yeah, I kind of figured that is where you would end up with this. So, I mean, at this point, so you don't like protein and you're not a fan of meat. Does that mean we should be vegetarian? Should we be vegan? Where should we go?
Well, it's not that I don't like protein or that I don't like fat or anything like that. It's that I don't like this reductionist nutrition where we talk about things in terms of protein, fat, or carbohydrates. What I think we need to do is change the talk back to whole foods. I think people should eat whole foods and mostly fruits and vegetables. Do you have to be vegetarian or vegan? Those are very, very healthy lifestyles. But to me, vegan is an ethic. You don't want to do it because you want to help the universe, the environment, the fact that animals are tortured. And so being vegan, and I have evolved to vegan myself, but that's purely ethical. You can eat a healthy diet with some meat in it, but we've got to turn the tables. The plate needs to be dominated by fruits and vegetables. Animal protein does not need to be on every single plate that we eat. In fact, not every single day that we eat it. So I think a drastic reduction in the amount of meat we eat would be sufficient to make people much, much healthier.
And just to clarify, you know, you do say you need protein. You don't need animal protein. So you can get plenty of it from
plant-based,
peanuts, peanut butter,
right? Yes.
Beans and
well, plants,
other nuts.
And vegetables, broccoli's got protein.
Oh, does it? Okay.
And in fact, since I've become vegan, I've become more and more athletic. I've gained more muscle. I've been an Ironman. I've run marathons, all based on a purely plant-based diet where I never think once about how much protein I'm eating.
Look at
perfect.
You.
Yeah, okay. Our caller Rama in Fairfax has a question also about exercise and diet.
Rama, you're on KGO. Good evening.
Yeah, good evening, Drex. About 3 years ago, I began to swim every day for at least an hour. I guess probably under the influence of Jack LaLanne's lifestyle and what he advised. And I
combined to football, big news. News out of the UT football camp.
Go ahead, Rama. Sorry.
Ahead, Rama.
Yeah, and I combine that with being a vegetarian. I eat quite a bit of hummus and beans and rice for protein. And that seems to – the exercise seems to help my eating so that I don't overeat and I digest better. And I wonder what you think of that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that we're going to see more and more people like this. A lot of the people in the athletic world are starting to see that when they eat a plant-based diet, they seem to recover better. They seem to tolerate the exercise better. And it's really becoming something that a lot of endurance athletes are getting into, and even some strength athletes now. So, I think eating hummus and getting your protein from that is a fantastic source.
And it's good stuff, too. And I don't know why. It's really strange that Rama brought that up, because that seems to be my thing. Since my surgery, I have gone towards the beans and the plant-based. I do want to ask you before we leave, because we brought it up. And
I promise.
And yes, we promised that we would talk about the dry-cohol trend.
Dry-nuary.
Yes.
And, for January.
Right, exactly.
And what if you're not a protein-aholic, but you're just a plain old
alcohol?
Yes. Right. Well, it's always too much of a good thing, right? I mean, no matter what we look at it, overdoing it. I don't like the word moderation because, going moderate with meat is still a lot in American society. I mean, we need to go drastically low. Alcohol, there's several things wrong with alcohol. Number one, it's got more calorie density. density. So there's 7 calories per gram of alcohol, whereas there's 4 for carbohydrates. But on top of that, alcohol can lead you to eat improperly. It can certainly affect your liver, and it's just not part of a healthy lifestyle. I think once in a while, alcohol, I'll have a glass of wine for dinner once in a while, it's fine. But I think that what we need to start doing is looking at our overall pattern of behavior and not going on these drastic, crazy diets, but understanding what's good for us and what isn't, and doing more of what's good for us.
Well, last week when the study came out that, you know, oh, by the way, red wine's not good for you, even in moderation. Right. And I know you don't like that word, but I think of, especially right here in the Bay Area in NorCal, we said, oh, let's just swipe that one left. Goodbye.
Yeah,
yes. Right. We're not having that. Right.
That story didn't happen. Yeah.
We quickly ignored that. Well, doctor, fantastic. And I just love this. Proteinaholic. It's a great conversation, and the book is fantastic. Dr. Garth Davis, and if you can't find it, well, you can Proteinaholic, you can Google it, or you can find it at kgoradio.com. We will put up the link.
Exactly, and I wanted to impress on folks, too, that that link that we have up of yours at kgoradio.com includes recipes and ways to help improve your diet. So you can buy his book, and or you can just go to his website.
Really good stuff, powerful stuff. And I do thank you, doctor. Have a great year.
Thank you. Thanks
Talk
for having
to you again
me.
Soon. Uh-huh. And speaking of, well, all things Powerball, powerful Powerball, let's invite John Libertini in here to talk, because we have some good news here in Cali when it comes to the Powerball. That's next. That will be the good news on KGO 810.
Hear the news on KGO 810, then talk about it on the Drex Radio Show on KGO 810.
Hillary Clinton bought a Powerball ticket. And she said if she wins, she'll use the money to fund her campaign.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Bill Clinton said if he wins, Hillary will never see him again.
But apparently that's not going to work out, because it looks like the good news of the day happened right here in California.
Well, I was told to come in here and talk to you about the Powerballs drawing.
Yeah. Yes, you were.
Called it. All of this sex talk just has you.
I know, and proteinaholic and alcoholic.
Making it plural.
Right.
Okay, so here's...
She gets her quarters back. She was giving me her parking change. Here, you can have it back.
Because she was going to win and you were going to be SOL?
Exactly opposite. She was going to be.
He spotted me the dollar to get in the pool, and I was like, Jesus, I better pay him back or he'll screw me out of my winnings. I know he will. He'd be like... Where's my dollar? You don't get your $1 million, you know? Like,
here's your 4 quarters.
Thank
well,
you.
Guess what? There are no winners in this building.
Ba-dum-bum. Bum-bum.
There's at least one winning ticket, and that winning ticket is in the L.A. suburb of Chino Hills, which I'm told is one of the top 10 wealthiest suburbs in America.
Oh, we're getting just the mere thought of it gives me affluenza.
But the ticket was just bought there. Could have been a nice young man, you know, driving
please.
A delivery truck.
No, it's
well,
somebody right. driving a Rolls Royce.
It's somebody's maid.
So, but the news gets better, and this is the part I love. There were 12 tickets sold in California that matched 5 of 6 numbers.
Yeah.
3 of those in the Bay Area. Now, those tickets are worth $1 million apiece. And the tickets were sold at, drumroll please, the Larkfield 76 station in the 4600 block of Old Redwood Highway in Santa Rosa. The Chevron on Soquel Avenue in the 400 block in Santa Cruz, and the 7-Eleven, 2000 Nut Tree Road in Vacaville.
$1 million. $1 million.
Everybody's
looking at each other. Anybody here live in Santa Rosa around here? Okay.
Well, you know, it was funny. We called the clerk. We called the 76 station in Santa Rosa, and the guy didn't know there was a winner there.
You
know,
was
and,
cute.
And, yeah, he was cute. He kind of flipped out. And Carolyn, our editor tonight, said, so what would you do with that kind of money? He goes, man, I'm a gas station clerk. I wouldn't know what to do with that kind of money.
Aww.
Yeah, because he does. I wonder what proportion or what percentage he gets.
1%.
So he gets one. Well,
he's just a clerk, but right. The store gets 1% of whatever million. Jackpots right. win. So, yeah, that can sometimes be a nice little cool. hole.
Oh, my goodness.
You saw the news clip where the woman went and interviewed a guy live who was filling out his numbers, and she's like, so what would you do with the winnings? And he's like, hookers and cocaine. And
oh,
she,
yeah, that, I'm, she was right, so, that was the best one.
She was such a, she just wet her pants. And then the stupid douche back at the station goes, oh, the beauty of live radio or live television.
Right, and that's what you get. Yes.
Wait, I remember when I had my first beer.
Yeah, yeah, and you know he would do the same thing. He's like, hookers and blow, hookers and blow. And he's like, beauty of live television.
Chino Hills, what if it's Charlie Sheen?
There you go.
Hookers and blow.
Oh, yeah.
Rich get richer.
But he's given that up.
The more things change, the more they stay the same.
I guess. All right. It's kind of interesting that while we have you in here, John Lupertini, speaking of the good news of the day, are we celebrating the fact that our Oakland Raiders, it seems like Oakland is celebrating that, you know, the fact that.
Well, there is at least, this gives the city at least a year to cut a deal. This is an odd little deal where. The Raiders were thought to have a great chance with a stadium that was relatively close to the ocean with the San Diego Chargers. But there's been talk for 10 days to 2 weeks now that the Chargers might pair with the Rams for this spectacular stadium that they're going to build in Inglewood. It's on the site of the old Hollywood racetrack.
Right.
But the Raiders aren't out of this yet. San Diego's been offered that opportunity. They haven't accepted it yet. There's some belief that they're going to go back to San Diego and see how things play out down there. There is a public financing measure that's on the ballot, possibly as early as June, July, if not, then November. If that doesn't pass, then they're likely to go to the L.A. area. But, you know, nothing is a done deal. Whatever happens, this gives the city of Oakland at least a year. And maybe 2 years, because if for some reason San Diego decides to stay in San Diego, the Chargers decide to stay in San Diego, then the Raiders would be offered the opportunity to move down to Inglewood and share that stadium with the Rams. There's some conflicting information out there about the NFL not wanting three teams in all of Southern California, whether it's San Diego and or Los Angeles. But just look at it this way. City of Oakland gets at least a year to negotiate something. Again, it's a what the mayor wants to do is a combination stadium, office complex, shopping, possibly some housing. Well, it's a great idea in theory, but, you know, it's like buying a television that's got a VCR and all these other components in it. You know, the more gadgets you have attached, the more that could go wrong with it. I mean, the NFL has even urged the city of Oakland to just focus on a football stadium. Because there are too many tentacles to this. And, it again, I thought it was a fatal decision before. But Mayor Libby Schaaf said last night, and she clearly had some inside information, that she knew that the vote would go the way it went and that they would have time to cut a deal. And as you noted, and this will become more and more apparent in the next 3, 4, 5 years, tech is moving into Oakland. That's a blank canvas. And you get that money over there, it's not only going to transform that area. It is going to afford the professional sports teams over there a lot of lucrative opportunities.
All right. Thank you very much, John Lupertini. Let's thank our guest, Lisa Durden, our activist in the 7 o'clock hour, Dr. Paul Joannides, the guide to getting it on. And along with your quarters, Heather, you can take that home. That's a big book.
I am going
That'll
to read
you
this
some
all.
Heavy
I'm going
reading.
To be the best at sex person
and,
ever.
And Dr. Garth Davis, Proteinaholic, was just fantastic. All right, have a great evening. The John Bachelor Show is next on KGOA 10.